The dogs arranged themselves peacefully around the room, and, except for a brief dispute between the Scotty and the Cocker Spaniel about the occupancy of a deep chair, there was no sign of their previous violent behaviour. They lay regarding me with a friendly boredom, and at the same time fighting a losing battle against sleep. Soon the last nodding head had fallen back, and a chorus of heavy breathing filled the room. But I was unable to relax with them. A feeling of let down gripped me. I had screwed myself up for an interview, and I was left dangling. This was all very odd. Why should anyone write for an assistant, arrange a time to meet him, and then go to visit his mother? Another thing, if I was engaged, I would be living in this house, yet the housekeeper had no instructions to prepare a room for me. In fact, she had never even heard of me. My musings were interrupted by the doorbell ringing, and the dogs, as if touched by a live wire, leapt screaming into the air and launched themselves in a solid mass through the door. I wish they didn't take their duties so seriously. There was no sign of Mrs. Hall, so I went out to the front door where the dogs were putting everything into their fierce attack. "Shut up!" I shouted, and the din switched itself off. The five dogs cringed abjectly around my ankles, almost walking on their knees. The big greyhound got the best effect by drawing his lips back from his teeth in an apologetic grin. I opened the door and looked into a round, eager face. Its owner, a plump man in Wellington boots, leant confidently against the railings.
"Hello, hello, Mr. Farnanin."
Not at the moment. Can I help you?"
"Aye. Give him a message when he comes in. Tell him Bert Sharp of Barrow Hills has a cow what wants boring out."
"Boring out?"
"That's right. She's nobbut going on three cylinders."
"Three cylinders?"
"Aye, and if we don't do so much, she'll go wrang in her ewer, won't she?"
"Very probably."
"Don't want felon, do we?"
"Certainly not."
"Okay, you'll tell him then. Ta-ra."
I returned thoughtfully to the sitting room. It was disconcerting, but I had listened to my first case history without understanding a word of it. I had hardly sat down when the bell rang again. This time I unleashed a frightening yell which froze the dogs when they were still in mid-air. They took the point and returned abashed to their chairs. This time it was a solemn gentleman, with a straightly adjusted cloth cap resting on his ears, a muffler knotted precisely over his Adam's apple, and a clay pipe growing from the exact centre of his mouth. He removed the pipe and spoke with a rich, unexpected accent.
"Me name's Mulligan, and I want Mr. Farnan to make up some medicine for me dog."
"Oh? What's the trouble with your dog, Mr. Mulligan?" He raised a questioning eyebrow and put a hand to his ear. I tried again with a full, bloodied shout.
"What's the trouble?"
He looked at me doubtfully for a moment.
"He's vomiting, sir. Vomiting bad."
I immediately felt on secure ground now, and my brain began to seethe with diagnostic procedures.
"How long after eating does he vomit?"
The hand went to the ear again.
"What's that?"
I leant close to the side of his head, inflated my lungs, and bawled.
"When does he vomit? I mean, vomit."
Comprehension spread slowly over Mr. Mulligan's face. He gave a gentle smile.
"Aye, he's vomiting. Vomiting bad, sir."
I didn't feel up to another effort, so I told him I would see to it and asked him to call later. He must have been able to lip-read me because he seemed satisfied and walked away. Back in the sitting room, I sank into a chair and poured a cup of tea. I'd taken one sip when the bell rang again. This time, a wild glare from me was enough to make the dogs cower back in their chairs. I was relieved they had caught on so quickly. Outside the front door, a lovely red-haired girl was standing. She smiled, showing a lot of very white teeth.
"Good afternoon,"
she said in a loud, well-bred voice.
"I am Diana Brompton. Mr. Farnan is expecting me for tea."
I gulped and clung to the door handle.
"He's asked you to tea?"
The smile became fixed.
"Yes, that is correct,"
she said, spelling the words out carefully. "He asked me to tea."
I'm afraid Mr. Farnan isn't at home. I can't say when he'll be back. The smile was plucked away.
Oh,
she said. And she got a lot into the word.
At any rate, perhaps I could come in.
Oh, certainly, do come in, I'm sorry, I babbled, suddenly conscious that I'd been staring open-mouthed at her. I held open the door and she brushed past me without a word. She knew her way about, because when I got to the first corner, she had disappeared into the room. I tiptoed past the door and broke into a gallop, which took me along another 30 yards or so of twisting passage to a huge, stone-flagged kitchen. Mrs. Hall was pottering about there, and I rushed at her.
There's a young lady here, a Miss Brompton. She's come to tea, too.
I had to fight an impulse to pluck at her sleeve. Mrs. Hall's face was expressionless. I thought she might have started to wave her arms about, but she didn't even seem surprised. You go through and talk to her, and I'll bring a few more cakes, she said.
But what the heck am I going to talk to her about? Look, how long is Mr. Farnan going to be?
Oh, just chat to her for a bit. I shouldn't think he'll be very long, she said, calmly.